Welcome to the Cashflow Champs podcast, the show where we demystify real estate investing so you have the tools you need to gain financial freedom through passive investments in real estate. And now your host, Cashflow Champs Managing Partner, Prashant Kumar.
Hey guys, this is Prashant Kumar from Cashflow Champs. Today you are listening to yet another podcast of Cashflow Champs Real Estate Podcast. With us today, we have distinguished guest, Faraz Musa. Faraz is a serial entrepreneur with technology background. He holds computer science degree from University of Texas at Austin. He began working in Microsoft. You know, he became an invited expert for W3C to help define the next generation of web. He went, after Microsoft, he went to start a successful software company developing mobile apps like I did and backend. Kind of a similar background for us, yours and mine, but obviously, after that in 2014, he opened a open space realty company dedicated for rental property acquisitions and property management. Faraz continued his career in real estate by launching Disrupt Equity with Ben Settles to focus on large-scale multifamily acquisitions. To date, Disrupt Equity has acquired 3,500-plus units, $600 million-plus asset under management, primarily throughout Georgia, Texas, and Florida. Faraz, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate it very much. As I said, your background is, you know, kind of similar to mine. You know, I am from IT and I started a software company and now I am in real estate. But along with me, you know, today we have Paul Senior, you know, one of other managing partner. We both of us co-host this podcast. The primary purpose of this podcast is to basically educate our listeners about the benefit, the fundamental benefits of passive investing. But we want to give you an opportunity to tell about your unique background. So let's start with, a simple question. You know, I introduce you, but you introduce yourself. You know, what is unique in your background?
Yeah, so Prashant, Paul, thank you guys for having me.
Sure.
You know, it's a pleasure to be here. And yeah, I mean, I think you kind of hit it on the head, right? I came out of that tech world. Whenever I left Microsoft, it was really about building, you know, software in old industries like real estate. That was the vision I had. Well, fast forward, Disrupt Equity, I realized it's not about starting brand new software. It's about leveraging software and tying it all together into a package to make us competitive and differentiate ourselves with our competitor in an old industry like real estate. And so that's where really Disrupt Equity and Disrupt Management were born, right? Management specifically, I mean, it's a really dated industry. We use a lot more tools, systems, processes than, you know, any of our competitors. And that's what allowed us to stand out and be unique compared to everybody else.
So what really inspired you to get into multifamily? I know you started with single family and in the property management. Why multifamily?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, for me, after getting into it, I realized it's the things that I like. It's people's numbers, systems, right? And so those three things are things that I enjoy. At Microsoft, I was a program manager, right? Yes, I'm very technical. I'm a developer too, but at Microsoft, as a program manager, it's more the people side. And what I like about multifamily is there's a lot of people, right? And just numbers is the other part of it. Numbers don't lie. Now, sometimes people will fall in love with numbers and keep changing them, but really, you know, fundamentally, it's a very numbers-oriented business. And last but not least, it's about building systems, right? You can really scale if you can build the right systems. And so that's ultimately what attracted me towards the entire space.
So, you know, for us, we are one of the leader in the space, as we know. You're one of the thought leader. And, you know, kudos to you for the great success that you have had in this space. There are so many people who start out in this business and really don't make it to be successful in the multifamily space because it's a different mindset, different thinking that comes on versus a single family space. What are some of the things that you think helped you to transition so successfully from where you were in the IT realm into the multifamily space?
Yeah, it's funny. I was just talking about this just earlier today. And it's not specifically about IT and multifamily. It's about mindset, right? Ultimately, we're all entrepreneurs, right? And what makes a successful entrepreneur? It's a person that can constantly revisit what they're doing and evolve it for where they're heading, right? The way you run a business that has $100 of revenue is different than $1,000, which is different than $100,000, which is different than $1 million of revenue, which is different than $10 million of revenue, right? You have to constantly be willing to shift. Every one of those stages is a very different mindset, right? And really being able to constantly rethink and say, okay, how are we doing this today? Does this make sense? Why are we doing it this way? And is where we're going, is this aligned, right? And just to pick on payroll, I mean, heck, our first hire, I remember it was just the auto ACH functionality at Chase. That was our payroll. Whereas today, it's 150 employees. We have a whole payroll processing system. And each every other week, it's a whole system to do all the payroll correctly. And so all of these things have to be constantly revisited, right? It's about picking what's important at that moment in time, you know, build that out at just good enough, right? And then focus on the next problem. So I like to say a good entrepreneur is someone that was a B student. It's not about being the A plus. It's about being the B where it's good enough to move forward, but then you're constantly moving around and solving one thing after the next.
Take us through some of the challenges for us. You know, I know we all know what are the challenges we face, but we want to hear from the horse's mouth. What are the challenges you faced? And we face them every day. But tell us something unique that you have faced and how you have overcome that.
We faced everything. It might be easier to say, well, something we haven't faced. It might be a simpler list. I mean, everybody fixates on buying the deals, right? And buying the deals, while it's tough, it's also the easy part of the business, right? It's hard to operate the deals and perform and make sure you perform and build your track record, right? And so really most of the difficulties in this business is around people. It's a people business, right? An operations is very people heavy. You have tenants, you have employees, you have investors, right? And being able to build out those processes. I mean, we've done deals where we were undercapitalized. We've done deals where we had a terrible lender that was a pain. We've done deals with crime, shootings, murders. You know, we've seen it and done it all. And as an entrepreneur, it's about facing adversity and challenges and working through them one at a time, right? And keeping level-headed and not overreacting to something, not taking it emotionally, but pausing and say, okay, that's what happened. Great. It's unfortunate. It's terrible. It sucks. It's painful. Whatever. But okay, what are the paths forward? And then picking a path and then place that bet and move forward, right? And so I think it's, you know, like I said, we've seen it all. I mean, we've had it all. We've had, like I said, we've had deals where murders happened before closing. We've had deals murders happen after we bought it. We've had deals that, you know, someone gets assaulted. We've had deals where, you know, we had a fire, right? We've had deals with roof caving in. We've had deals tech today. There's a deal that we insure that had a tornado. I mean, you know, these different things you see, you work through them and you solve them. And they're, you know, this business is not an easy business, right? It's not a get rich quick business. I think a lot of people think it's a get rich quick business, but it's, you know, you do build wealth over time, and it's about really constantly performing and doing the right thing and being comfortable to solve each problem.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And we're going to get to the passive part of it too, in terms of how the passive investors can benefit. But from an operational standpoint, first, I mean, when you were just getting started and this thing, you start really getting traction, what were some of the strategic or hires that you take on first in terms of getting the operations of the business going so that it can continue to grow? What were some of the pieces that you got in there early?
No, so it goes back to the question earlier, right, about how do you constantly grow? And I was saying, you know, you have to constantly evolve. And a good one of those is really early on, I recognized, you know, me and my partner were two guys, started it. And I recognized, you know, kind of like what Prashant said, a lot of people will do 2, 3, 4 deals and then they disappear. Right. But it's because they get overwhelmed in the doing, right? It's too busy working in the business, not on the business. And so early on, I kind of recognized, hey, we're going to need to get an asset manager very quickly, right? And be able to quickly hand off so we can continue to grow, right? And we, you know, and it's tough early on because essentially you're not taking a paycheck, right? You really need to be able to feed that asset manager. And so, you know, both of us have a very long-term mentality, right? For us, it's not making a quick buck today. It's about really growing the business and, you know, we'll make it on the back end. And so we recognized early on, we need to hire that asset management before, you know, to be able to continue to buy deals. But that was really one of the very first one was actually an assistant, but then the real critical one is an asset manager and continuing to have that person in place that's implementing the business plan, right? While we continue to get out there, source deals and, you know, kind of steer the larger ship.
So are you guys vertically integrated at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. So early on, we used to use third-party management. then, about, you know, we've seen how bad third-party management can be. And so you start our own management company, and we do first and third-party management. We manage for a lot of other operators and friends that we know. And, you know, it's been valuable, right? It's been a win-win for us. Management is not a profit center, right? You know, our payroll is very significant on the management side, but it's really about having mass. And it's a win-win because as the management grows, it helps our clients, you know, it helps our deals. And so where we make money is actually on our deals performing, but having that third party is super valuable because we continue, you know, it gives us more mass across the board. And, you know, it's been great. I mean, we've turned around many deals and really get it humming and performing and just finding the best talent we can find. So we've been in a very, very big kind of hiring spree the past 2-3 months, just hiring on a lot of key critical roles and really staffing that management side so we can continue to go out there and start to grow it.
It sounds like, I mean, the negative conversation is going towards the positive side where, you know, trying to see you are scaling and you are obviously enjoying that. I would like to listen a little bit more about your good moments, you know, best experiences in this business. You know, tell us a little bit more if you don't mind.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of good moments. You know, I mean, it's awesome to turn around a property, right? I remember, you know, one of our early deals was a deal we bought in Atlanta, 99 units. The guys that owned it should have never owned a deal, or it's kind of that situation. And, you know, we went through the school of hard knocks on that deal too, because we had the world's worst lender. You know, we were undercapitalized, but it's a deal that we took over. We brought occupancy down to 40% and brought it back up to 90%. You know, the very beginning brought on armed security that implemented a curfew and essentially very quickly cleaned out all the drug dealers, prostitution, and all of that stuff, and really got it kind of bottomed out, and then started to invest back in the asset, put in a playground, really started to build a community. And it was just night and day, right? Tenants would come up to us just super thankful for, hey, this is a place that, you know, people are now comfortable. And so that's rewarding, right? Being able to take kind of a rough deal and completely change it around. Now, it's also stressful, right? Like my partner, I like to say, lost all of his hair on that deal. He's bald. You know, I probably lost a few along the way as well. But it's rewarding, right? And being able to do that time and time again, or being able to see the impact you have for your investors, right? That's the other thing. It's like, yeah, we do well for our investors, but you almost forget about how big of an impact it is. But until you get to the finish line, you're like, man, this person put in $100,000, but we gave him $400,000. Like, that's more than they made the past 10 years of their life, right? And so these kinds of things are super rewarding to be able to see and be able to speak about. And so I'm very thankful we've had a good record, been able to do that. And, you know, it's fun to see. And the other thing I like too, it's for me, at least personally, you know, like me and my partner, we're not flashy guys. It's not about money. It's about sense of accomplishment. And it's been awesome to see just kind of the team grow, right? You know, I remember the first one of our members, she was an intern that we hired, one of our first early hires, and now she's running a department, right? And be able to see and kind of nurture that and seeing people grow in their roles and their careers and, you know, being part of that impact. Like, I remember we had our holiday party 2 years ago, just looking out and just seeing all the families and people, and you're like, man, like, there's a mass here, right? And, you know, it's our responsibility to not screw up the company, right? Because it's impacting all these people.
Has that kind of surpassed your expectation, like where you are now? I mean, did you have this projection?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I still remember sitting on my computer one night back in December, whatever year it is, thinking of names for a company. And I'm like, this, you know, I knew I wanted something more tech related, and like, is Disrupt Equity available? And it wasn't. It was perfect, exactly what I wanted, right? In terms of the name, the fit, and, you know, but not really thinking what it would actually turn into, right? No idea that it would grow to kind of what it was, so what it has been. So, and I like to say, I've been telling the team, we're just getting started. Like, we're 5% of where we're trying to get to, and telling people to have that mentality, because we have a lot of other initiatives kind of at play and coming up. So,
Ferris, awesome questions, awesome answers, actually, not questions, but I'm going to ask something very unique now. I want to ask you just take a step back and think, what are the real actions that you have taken over the last 4 or 5 years in terms of scalability of this business in the order, right? I mean, starting when you started, what are the real steps that you have taken over 4 or 5 years where you have grown the company to 150 employees? What are the things that you would like to tell other operators, those who are listening and they learn from you?
Yeah, you know, again, it's about solving what's important at that point in time, right? So first and foremost, about bringing on better people than me, right? Bringing on good, strong people to help the workload. Then it's about starting to look at it like a business, right? But who is our client? Our client is an investor. Where do investors come from? How do we find out about it? How do we nurture them? How do we prep them, right? Then ultimately, how do we raise money and close them, right? That's one piece of it. Well, the other side of it is that we need deals, because ultimately, what do? We find deals, we find money. That is the core of the business at its simplicity. And today, deals is multifamily apartments, but we will grow into other verticals, other things that we've been strategizing and planning. But, you know, how do we find deals, right? Well, that boils down to broker relationships and being best in class and following up with the brokers and, you know, having good friends. I mean, heck, we just hired on one of the, you know, person from one of the top offices here in Houston to be, you know, broker side, kind of be our in-house helping acquisition side, right? And how do we be kind of front and center with all the brokers to where they know us and know us well, so we can be first to kind of get a look at those deals, right? That's probably the next iteration. And then from there, it's about tracking progress and building reporting to support all of that. And so, you know, it's constantly evolving, and it depends on where you are in that life cycle of a business. And so I'm excited because I feel like we've made a lot of change, you know, shifts the past year, and really eager to kind of let the dust settle and see kind of really where do we push to next.
So how many employees do you have? I know we said 150, but in your scaling period, what are the key people that you brought into the organization? How did you decide?
You know, like I said, asset management was key. Bringing on marketing was key, right? Because again, my software company, eventually it fell because I didn't realize the value of sales and marketing. So I knew it wasn't going to solve that, or wasn't going to make that mistake. Ops, right? But someone to kind of head up management. And then within ops, there's so much that goes into it and doing it well, right? Around just good backbone, good staff. And then from there, you start to grow into some of the other responsibilities, right? Investor relations, HR, IT, all of these become kind of critical pieces. And the thing I like to say is once we brought on the HR person, it matured the company significantly, right? Like you kind of, again, it's one of those lost things upon growth. Like you don't realize you need it until you're like, wow, now that I have it, how did we have it without it, right? And so you do different people, different stages of that cycle, and it evolves that company. So, you know, and I like to tell people, you know, your perception is reality to some degree, right? And so you want your investors to see you're professional, to see you have a team, to see you, you know, you're bringing on the best in class people, right? I mean, heck, we have a CFO now who is one of the, I'd say the top CPAs that did the syndication paperwork for a lot of operators, right? Now she's our CFO. Our investors see that, our investors appreciate that, but most importantly, we'll be the first guys to get K-1s out, literally coming up here this next week to all of our investors, right? And so constantly evolving and solving the challenge and bring in those people to help.
You know, Prashant, one of the things about this business is that we all know that we want to get investors and retain them to be repeat investors. And I know that's a challenge. We are on a path now that you have gone before. And what were some of the techniques that you kind of used to kind of retain your high net worth individuals, or even to get investors in the first place, to invest in your first couple of deals so that you can show them what you can do and so that you can earn their business along the way? Of course, we want to give them good returns and everything else like that. But what are some tips you may be able to give there for operators?
Yeah. So first and foremost, performance is always the easiest thing. You perform, they tell their friends. You know, we literally have one investor that's told 30, 40 of their friends, right? That's the perfect investor. But now, problem is performing takes time, right? These deals have 2-3 year life cycle. So it's about what can you do in the interim, right? Well, there's performing partially. There's communication. And I like to tell people, you know, you only have a few touch points with your investors, right? Raising money is one of those touch points. Maybe a monthly update is another touch point. An intro call is another touch point. Your monthly updates is another touch point. That's about it, right? And so if you screw up one of those, you've ruined one of your four touch points with your investors. And so it's really about standing out and being that person that they think of, right, whenever something comes up. And it could be as simple as, you know, early on, I like to say we were the first syndicator to have mobile-friendly emails. Before, you know, everybody was just sending out text emails. Again, being from the tech world, I got an email template, mobile-friendly is beautiful. We sent out our updates, and literally the next month, I saw another operator copy ours. And theirs was a knockoff because the image was rasterized. You could tell it was a knockoff, and it was almost the exact same as ours. But again, you know, they saw that level of sophistication, our investors saw it, and that person mimicked it, and now it's kind of the norm, right? And so having those touch points and valuing them with your investors is the next way, right? Because even if the deal hasn't exited, even if the deal's not performing, right, it's still a way to show, look, but we're doing the right thing, we're communicating, we're solving these problems, here are the challenges, here's what we're doing to fix them, and, you know, pushing forward. Investors appreciate that, right? Because ultimately they want to invest with someone they like, know, and trust, first and foremost. Then they want to invest in a good deal.
So let's jump on to a little bit on the passive side. You know, I know, you know, we are talking about how we retain our investors. Tell us what experiences your, you know, investors had with you, you know, how their lives have been impacted. You know, what is that you guys are doing, which is helping them?
Yeah, I mean, for us, we invest for cash flow. Our investors invest for cash flow, right? You know, mailbox money. And so for us, again, it goes back to what I said, those touch points with the investors, right? We were the first ones that was kind of big on having this, I called it white glove investor treatment, right? It kind of came from the tech world. How do you white glove the service? Well, same thing for our investors, right? We would have somebody they can talk to, someone that would complete all the paperwork for them and send it to them in DocuSign. All of these little tips and tricks to simplify the process and make it easier for investors to invest. And so constantly looking at all of those kinds of things to give them that good experience so they will, you know, first invest and then continue to invest from there.
What systems do you use, if you don't mind sharing, for
number one,
for managing the property, number two, for investor relations?
So from the management side, we're a real page shop. So that's the core property management software. There's some other software that we use around it. But again, I like to tell people it's not about right or wrong about a system. A lot of times it's about just using a freaking system and, you know, actually tying it together, right? Same thing on the investor side. We used to use, I said this last night at our meetup, we used to use MailChimp and then we moved to ActiveCampaign and now we're on HubSpot. There's not a right or wrong. There's pros and cons with each of them. But it's about using it, committing to it, tying it to the rest of the ecosystem, and then tracking it. In addition to that, on the investor side, we use InvestNext, right? That's what we use for raising. You know, now that didn't exist, we used to do this without better software, right? Now it's gotten a lot easier to streamline that process. But again, it works great, right? It's InvestNext is good. Cashflow Portal is another one. There's a couple of these that are very good, and they do variations of the same thing. And so I want people to kind of take away, there's not a right or wrong. A lot of times it's about avoiding analysis paralysis and being that B person. You don't need to do the work to where it's an A+. It's a B. This is good enough. Solve my problems. Move forward.
That's a great answer. Actually, you know, there's really nothing right and wrong. It's what fits your need and what is available out there. You know, InvestNext, Cashflow Portal, Syndication Pro, IMS, you know, you name it. There are 100 softwares, you know. So we are jumping into the lightning round. We'll ask a few questions very quickly. One piece of advice that impact your life and how you think it may benefit others.
One piece of advice that may impact my life. You know, I think the biggest thing is just be genuine, right? People see genuineness and appreciate it. And that goes to brokers, that goes to investors, that goes to employees. Right. And so many of our employees they love the culture. You know, both me and partner are very genuine. We'll go hang out and it's a pretty open door policy, sometimes still fault. Everybody gets exposure to everybody. And so people appreciate the genuineness, right? And you know, that goes to admitting your faults, right? But we've made so many mistakes and I could talk all day about them, right? We're not perfect by any means, but we're very much trying to solve things and do things the right way. So it's probably, you know, maybe the simplest thing I'll say that it can impact people's lives. It's not about being the person that shields it up and won't talk about, you know, price points and won't talk about this or that. It's about really figuring out ways to be genuine and add value and help others because that will come back.
All right, cool. And then I'll jump into the next question in the lightning round here. Share one of your personal habits that contributes to your success.
I would say email management. I am, you know, Microsoft, the thing that I learned very early on is how to be a master with email. You know, there's a lot of tips and tricks, but I feel like that's part of our secrets. I can juggle 1,000 things and keep them all fairly. Again, go back. I could be a B student on them all. You know, I'm not going to be perfect on them all, but just being really, really good with email management, right? A lot of what we do in this business is just project management on steroids. So knowing how to keep track of everything, being diligent, not dropping the ball on anything is critical.
What would you recommend if there's any book for our either active investors or passive investors, whatever you have in mind?
The book that was kind of an eye-opener for me early on was Millionaire Real Estate Investor. That's what it's called. It's a great book wrote by Gary Keller.
Yeah, I read
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and you know, it just opened my mind because it talked about the couple that makes whatever $50,000-$60,000, and that's all they make. But how do they retire millionaires, right? And it talks about the pillars of real estate and why real estate is a very powerful vehicle. Too many people in the tech world think they're the smartest person, and they Google real estate versus stock market. What do they see? Stock market averages 11% the past 1,000 years. Real estate only appreciates 2-3%. But they don't understand all of the other things that make real estate really powerful, from leverage to cash flow to pay down of the note to depreciation to appreciation. So
I think that's a very good point. Do you want to elaborate on this last point a little bit more? I just want to hear a little bit more on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you're new to this space, right, go really understand what makes real estate tick. Right. It's not just this 2-3% appreciation. That's not why we buy deals. Right. It's about taking all these things together into a nice, solid asset and being able to generate a very attractive return. So.
Awesome.
Well, first, we're so thankful for you being here today. Absolutely. Just leave with us how our audience can maybe connect with you beyond this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. www.disruptequity.com. Or send me an email, Ferris@disruptequity.com. And thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
It was great to have you, Ferris. I mean, we have known you for so many years, but it's always good to connect on a podcast where we can sit together and have serious conversation. We are from Cashflow Champs. You know, we are also similar to you, probably, you know, not there as much as big as you, but you know, we are into multifamily space. I do personally assisted living. We have some, you know, podcasts, webinars, and, you know, virtual summits and stuff like that. You have spoken on our, on our summit also. So folks, you know, check Ferris out. Check us out at cashflowchamps.com. Until next time, thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Cashflow Champs podcast. Cashflow Champs partners with busy working professionals and entrepreneurs that want to build and maintain generational wealth through real estate. Visit cashflowchamps.com to learn more about us